verses where Shukadeva Goswami he's still offering his obeisances to the personality of Godhead. He's requesting that the Lord kindly be pleased with him. That means his effort, sincere effort, to try to serve him mostly. And the particular service is describing to Maharaj Pariksit the process of creation, how the Lord works with his energies and brings from the unmanifest state to the manifest state. The whole of creation. These are not the details, but they're the principles of sarga, what the Lord does. The Purusha incarnations, the Lord expands as the Purusha incarnation. He manifests ingredients. He then causes the living entities to become subjected to those ingredients, which he is the generator of. And when we ended up, he's, in addition to praying to the Lord, he's praying to Vyas, who understood all this, compiled it, explained it to his son, Shukadeva. He's respecting the source of his understanding of his process of creation. And the chapter ends, so he wants to go into further detail because he's described principles. Now the concluding verses, he's gesturing in the direction of Brahma and Narada. That as Brahma explained to Narada, I will explain to you. This is the simple succession. The theme of the end of the chapter and beginning of the next chapter is specific succession knowledge, as opposed to speculative knowledge, descending knowledge as opposed to ascending knowledge. So he's explained what he heard from Vyas. He's the son of Vyas, Vyas person, father. And where did Vyas receive this knowledge from? From Narada. Where did Narada receive this knowledge from? From Brahma. Where did Brahma receive this knowledge from? Directly from the personality of Brahma. So, you can't get a better teacher than the personality of Godhead. Prabhupada once said, if you want perfect knowledge, go to a perfect person. He can give you perfect knowledge. And that perfect person is God. If you don't have capacity to approach God, then you approach one who has, or approach one who has, who has. It's a simple succession. In the way of disciplic succession, shown by Shukadeva here, he knows that he's not just blah blah. He's specifically referring to what he understood from Vyas, and through Vyas what Narada heard from Brahma, which is what Brahma heard from the Supreme Lord. We're very careful to just give factual knowledge. Prabhupada uses this phrase, the two purports, four or five times each. Factual knowledge, factual, factual. And then the contrasting term is theories. Prabhupada didn't like, perhaps, maybe. But that's the way of modern science. But then they say it was like factually like this. And then some time passes and some more data comes, and then that factually disappears and becomes another factual. Prabhupada didn't like that. He said it's cheating. They don't know. They should just say they don't know. But instead they say, perhaps maybe. And they get government dollars to do research to find out if perhaps maybe is so and not so. Gee. But it's not that nobody knows. They just don't want to go to those that know. They want to go perhaps maybe to cheat. That's not the fund of this system. My dear king, Shukadeva addresses Lord Krishna, Brahma, the firstborn, are being questioned by Narada, exactly appraised him on this subject. And it was directly spoken by the Lord to his own son, who was impregnated with knowledge from his very birth. So this is my story. Imagine being impregnated with knowledge from very birth. Veda Garba, or a Vedantist from the embryo. Of course, there was no embryo. But Garba means egg or embryo. So, in the very beginning of Brahma's life, born on the lotus flower, emanating from the lotus stem, emanating from the lotus navel, Bhagavad Vishnu, very quickly thereafter, only 100 years had passed, the lifetime of Brahma, that's a flash, it was imparted transcendental knowledge, Veda Garbha. Veda Garbha, Yadat, Sakshad, Abhyadat Sakshad was directly apprised, or directly spoken by the Lord to Brahma, part of the design. Then Prabhupada makes a very interesting statement. He said, you have to understand how Prabhupada uses words. Without Vedic knowledge, or perfect infallible knowledge, no one can create anything. Now, people create things all the time. There's a Radanga, that was pretty, I always thought that was pretty ingenious. Clay, Radanga breaks. And you can't get somebody over here to make it, so they just made it quite a west. And a little head that you have, put some screws in. Nice creation. And I wouldn't say that I know the people that designed this thing. They're not Veda Garbhas. So, that the language of creating is specific here. This is technology. It's taking something that's already done and reproducing it, and that's not creating. Creating is what Brahma does. There's nothing. I mean, there's literally nothing. There's darkness in all directions. And a lotus flower. Must have known. Bored or something. He's got this desire to create a universe and there's nothing. Nobody even to tell, hey, what do I do next? Nobody. No obedience. Nothing. And so, to do what Brahma does, that's creation. Before, so, sarga and disarga, what Vishnu does, there's also, only the unmanifest state of some total of material elements, and the unmanifest state of the three modes of nature. And the dormant state of karma, screeching halt, for taking the dormant state of things and making them a manifest state, and then taking the manifest state, which is what Brahma does, and making something. Both of those require perfect knowledge. So the indication is, Brahma did it, so he's got to have perfect knowledge. It's like logic. And he does have perfect knowledge, so he can perfectly explain it. So there's two evidences. He received it directly from Lord Vishnu, and then with that, he demonstrated he had the perfect knowledge because he didn't make this, you know, make a big botch of things. He, you know, he did a great job. and the understanding, the cause and effect of things, the push and pull of things, on the material nature. Amazing. Prabhupada was recently hearing him say that imagine having a factory that took all the leaves from all the trees all of a sudden off all the trees, and then the next season manufactured all the leaves and put them on all the trees all over the planet. That's it. Manufacture the leaves and fasten them onto the trees on all the places that there are places where we go. But by Krishna's arrangements, his cause and effect arrangements, it happens every year. All over the world. And it produces more trees that do the same thing. It's like, you know, build a car that produced other cars. And that one got old. No. No. So that's not... There must be perfect knowledge behind it. And perfect knowledge, we're going to find from the question, the next question he asks, there must be the touch of spirit. Because otherwise, you don't have creation. Things stay dormant. Matter doesn't move. No matter how sophisticated you make the soup of material ingredients, it doesn't move on its own, only by touch of spirit. The force of this closing verse is Prabhupada saying the language, he says it in different ways, the language of the Vedas can be revealed only by the above mentioned disciplic succession, and to underscore it, and not otherwise. The language is there, but people that don't have approach through disciplic succession, because they don't have that touch of the Lord, then the language is not understood. They come out with something, you know, perhaps maybe something, and they say that this is the way that it is. Like the question at the temple that young girl asked, you know, Bhagavad Gita is it, and everybody accepts it. How come there's so many different renderings, modes of nature? Make for diversity and attachments to conceptions of life. I want to be God. I go read Bhagavad Gita and I read it a certain way. Don't surrender to Krishna. Wait a minute. Surrender up to me. Don't surrender to Krishna. How can someone come up? How can they? They can because they have a strong prior disposition. And worship of the demigods is indirect. I didn't pour the pump, of course, if you don't have proper understanding. Bhagavad Gita teaches, the Vedas teach about worship of demigods. I mean, the gentleman is teaching Hinduism. Three of the classes were on demigod worship. And that's Hinduism. But never from the Vedas. So the language of the Vedas is not understood by scholarship. In one sense, you can say that it's deliberate. But another is, it's just the nature of material existence. The nature of material existence is, we got this attitude towards Krishna, turn our back on Krishna, to Krishna. Then you read the Vedas, what are you going to get? Krishna's going to hide himself. Mahaprakasha Sarvaji Vogamaya, or conceal himself with his deluding potency. Vogamaya Samavaka. Mudho Yam Nabijana. Next paragraph. No, there is no use in theories. Period. Knowledge must be factual. Period. There are many things that are complicated. And one cannot understand them unless they are explained by one who knows. Vedic knowledge is also very difficult to know. It must be learned by the above-mentioned system. And again, otherwise it is not at all understood. It's deliberately repetitive. This system, and there isn't an alternative. Well, what if, but, perhaps, I don't want to surrender. Well, then you won't know. Yeah, but we got a research team, and we'll all learn Sanskrit, and we'll go out and we'll break the codes of Vedanta Sutra, and we'll understand the whole thing. People do that. It's our brash Western system, or the ascending knowledge system. Max Muller. Big bad dictionary. But, he's one of the chief proponents of this whole thing of mythology. And, a big scholar like that takes the whole European continent for century practically, and still today, one guy with a big brain. Intellectuals influence the perception of people in general. And the way of life and devotion doesn't give a hoot for Max Muller's and speculative approaches. Rather, Shukadeva Goswami prayed for the mercy of the Lord so that he might be able to repeat the very same message that was spoken directly by the Lord to Brahma, who was then spoken by Brahma to Narada, and of course Narada to Vyasa, Vyasa to him. It appears that when Vyasa spoke knowledge of the Vedas, he didn't just say, this is the way it is. He said, this is what Brahma spoke to Narada. So we're doing the same thing. We should be doing the same thing. The previous authority spoke like this. He states it again. Therefore, the statements of creation explained by Shukadeva Goswami are not at all, as the mundaners suggest, theoretical, but are perfectly correct. Prabhupada told the story of the author of a book that was a very famous book at some point in time, not so long ago, in India, in Sahaja. Is that a well-known book? Yeah. And it was such a well-known book that people would write about, it's like writing about Moby Dick. And, you know, Moby Dick means, and the whale means this, and the captain means that. So, if you want to know what a book means, you ask the author, what do you mean? Because some people would ask, why Sahaja? Because he's only mentioned the very beginning of the book, and it's all about other people. So the author then explained why he titled it Sahaja, what he meant to communicate through that book. So, same, that the creator, Brahma, asked him. He did it. And to do it, he had to know. It's quite logical. And that DVD of the people that are studying intelligent design, you know, for 20 years they're studying the flagella of an E. coli bacteria. It's just by a Brahma. Or a person that I stayed in our home, a Japanese student that was working on his third PhD on the cell divisions of the frog. And you pose a what if, that there's some spiritual touch that makes it possible. And the answer is, you know, as a scientist, we can't speak about that, because we don't have any ways of measuring that. If it is or it's not, we can't say. So, the question in the beginning of chapter 5 that Narada asked to Brahma is, please tell me that transcendental knowledge which specifically directs one to the truth of the individual soul and super soul. That's like the starting point of the question. Not like, there's cause and effect, but one needs to go to the original cause in order to understand downstream the cause and effect. It's like a mathematical calculation. If you make a mistake in the very beginning, all the other calculations thereafter are also flawed. You have to go all the way back to the very beginning of the calculation. So it's still on the subject of creation. This chapter 5 is called The Cause of All Causes. The process of creation has its cause, and then there's the cause of all causes. Now what does the scientist put in place of the cause of all causes? There's a few varieties. Nothing. Or chance. Now what's chance? You ever meet a chance? Mr. Chance. you know, threw some dice and it came out this way. But who's the guy that threw the dice? What's the cause of chance? There's no cause of chance, it's just chance. When back to the disciplic succession, when one hears these messages, the disciplic succession, and tries to assimilate them, one gets perfect information. Now this is just, at this point, it's information, and we were discussing Marsh Prixit is interested in more than information, because he already has information. He wants to deepen his connection with the Supreme Soul by hearing his glories and appreciating him, thus feeling even more appreciative of his nature and relating to him as in fact he is. He wants to deepen his connection with the Supreme. You get realization, not just more information, but we won't even get proper information without this process. Again, Prabhupada speaks of disciplic succession as opposed to speculation. And he makes the point, knowledge received by submissive inquiries and service is more effective than knowledge received in exchange for money. Okay, supposing there's some higher knowledge out there somewhere. What's the best way to receive that higher knowledge? The most effective way to receive that greater knowledge. Vedic system is submission and inquiry, not pay the guy. There are our, I'll say Western, or deviated from Vedic standard system is you have, there's something valuable out there, you pay money for that something valuable out there, and then you're entitled to it. But then, A, it's, you know, that system itself, you're going to get flawed, even information. And the Vedic knowledge, because it's based on the absolute truth. The absolute truth is approached by surrender and submission. There's no surrender and submission. I just give you some money and walk away. See you later. It's been nice knowing you for 5 minutes. I never see you again. I don't care about you. I only care about the commodity that you gave me in exchange for some money. So it's very sterile and dry. And impersonal. And therefore, I'm sure you've all noticed it, when you went into the classroom in the Western context, the air of disrespect for the teachers is shocking. I don't care about the teachers. Blah, 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 blah. Even while the teacher's been in class. Because, you know, they don't care. And so what inspiration is there for the teacher to teach other than to get some money? It just becomes, you know, a very dehumanized, very mercenary. What does he care even if he gives you the real thing? As long as he gets his money. It's just transactional. The Vedic process is altogether different. Service and submission. No money. A bona fide student has to satisfy the teacher by sincere service to obtain knowledge of the relation and nature of the individual soul and the super soul. So, Prabhupada would speak like that about, you know, giving the mantra. said, if I charged, you know, as people are doing, $150, I'll give you this mantra, and it will have these effects. Your country is such that people would have come forward, and I would have many millions of dollars. But I did not do that because that's not a Vedic process, and I, of course, have millions of dollars. But that's, you know, it's not, so that's a better form of business. It's just when there's something that's genuine, then the price is not a monetary price. The price is the Vedic price. Purity, submission, and service. Therefore, instead of asking for money, I told my students, no illicit sex, no gambling, no intoxication. So there's a lesser interest than if I said, do whatever you like, give me some money. The atmosphere is further contaminated by that mercantile mentality, and certainly higher education has become precisely that, so-called higher education. It's just brokering with industry to take the best brains and help them serve industry for a lower price than when they get their degree. It's just commercializing the whole process of education. It's really terrible. And as far as, you know, real knowledge, as Prabhupada is saying, the factual cause and effect, atheists put forward many self-made theories without any touch of cause and effect. But the Vedic process has very subtle laws governing how creation comes into being. And it's a good thing that it's not accessible to other than pure persons, because demoniac persons would make a heyday with subtle laws. How to exploit that for some kind of selfish purpose, but deliberately inaccessible. But here it is, you know, we're distributing Srimad Bhagavatam left and right. Still it's inaccessible without a submission and service and purity. Text number 2 of chapter 5. Narada says, my dear father, please describe factually the symptoms of this manifest world. What is its background? How is it created? How is it conserved? And under whose control is all this being done? So these questions, there's some more questions. It makes up the next several chapters, the answer to those questions. They're important questions. In the symptoms of this manifest world, my dear father, please describe factors, the symptoms of this manifest world. In text 13 is a direct answer. That is the I and mine mentality, talking all kinds of nonsense, I and mine. That's a symptom of this manifest world. What is its background? Also being addressed, as Prabhupada is saying in the purport, is it chance or is it intelligence? Classic question that is going on in modern science today. Is it in the battleground of courtrooms? There's something like a half a dozen court cases going on now. The judges are going to decide which way it happened. What qualification do they have? How is it created? Of course, that's already been identified. It's created by the Lord through His various potencies. But then there's even more specifics, like text 11. Brahma says, I create after the Lord's creation by His personal effulgence, known as the Brahma Jyoti. Just as when the sun manifests its fire, the moon, the firmament, the influential planets, and the twinkling stars also manifest their brightness. From the sun, there's reflected light. And the reflected light is there within the firmament, within creation. Similarly, the Supreme Lord exhibits His various potencies. And then the further execution of those various potencies by different entities, like Brahma Himself, or others who are Brahma also informed, or invites, or engages, like the Japatis. They do different things. It's just borrowed energy. They're not self-creating. There's this like the reflected light of the sun, of the stars, and the moon, and celestial bodies, reflecting the light of the sun. So that's a principle in terms of how things are created. But if you don't it makes sense, but it's also very marvelous that this isn't understood unless there is purity. And that standard of purity is the one surrenders to Krishna. And Prabhupada would say bluntly, someone doesn't surrender to Krishna, they're a mudha, fool, rascal. This is Krishna's thing. One scientist said to Prabhupada, Swamiji, this is very harsh. All scientists are fools and rascals? What about Albert Einstein? And Prabhupada said, no, he was a very good man. He accepted that there was God. It was just that hinging on that one thing. But those that conclude otherwise, they have some capacity for knowledge, and that the capacity being misdirected, the real knowledge is being stolen away by illusion. And being bombastic theories and conferences and writing books and papers and blah blah blah, and how is it conserved? And under whose control is all this being done? So that the purport, Prabhupada doesn't go to the details of the questions and responding to the questions, he's going to the essence. The difference between factual knowledge, he uses the word factual, facts, factually, so many times. As opposed to theories, there's these three things. In order to understand this world, one has to understand two other things along with this world. So there's phenomenal, and there's noumenal, and the noumenal has its two categories, its spirit, soul, and the supreme. In order to understand this place, you have to understand those things too, because this place doesn't come into being without those. So if you try to explain, no, we can't talk about soul, but you can't measure it, you don't know, or it doesn't exist, it's just denial, or we can't talk about it, then you're not going to get a proper picture. Some things, like, you know, the cell division of a frog, some things about down to, I'm sure they've got it down to, you know, detailed mathematical formulas and you know, laws of physics of, you know, this pressure and that. But whatever, however detailed, imagine Brahma, what a scientific brain Brahma has, is he not only knows how it happens, he makes it happen. Without 3 PhDs. He's got another qualification. But the other qualification is this submission to the personality of Godhead. And purity. So, matter, spirit, and controller of both. In short, Prabhupada writes, in this phenomenal world, three things are factually observed by any intelligent man. The living beings, the manifest world, and the ultimate control over them. Because that's the last question. Under whose control is all this being done? And the answer is, there is no control, it's just chance. The symmetry of creation and its regulative actions and reactions suggest the plan of an intelligent brain. Sounds like an intelligent design argument. Behind them. And by genuine inquiry, one may find out the ultimate cause with the help of one who knows them factually. So that's something that the intelligent design folks are missing. They don't have access to Shukadeva Goswami or Lord Brahma or Narada. They don't have access because they choose to not have access. They've chosen another approach. In one sense, to their credit, it's something like Prabhupada's mandate to the Bhaktivedanta Institute devotees, you know, get your degree or take your degree and use it in the language of your colleagues, and in the language of your colleagues, convince them about the data conclusions. That's an interesting challenge. And to some extent, the intelligent design folks are trying to do that. I'm sure their motivations are, to some extent at least, religious. Using that sophistication, so-called sophistication, complicated system of demonstrating things, and using that system to point in the direction of the cause. I say point in the direction of because it's not, it doesn't show, it doesn't disclose the absolute truth. By nature it can't. Anyway, the Bhagavatam doesn't bother with all of that external stuff. It's going straight at disclosing the absolute truth. This is factually how it happens. That's very nice. Refreshing. Any discussion?
I have observed that the students are very much inclined to reading different kinds of speculative literature and trying to find out what different other opinions are. So,
that's their training. That's their academic training.
So what kind of role you can play to somehow bring them back to the defining source of knowledge? Like, should we try to also read those literatures and try to show how they are, you know, bluffing, or just focus on our own scriptures and try to attract them to the tradition and message?
That's a nice question. Couple of things. I think a lot of that depends upon one's gift or inclination. Certainly not everybody should do that, but some, to some degree, some persons should do that. Like, should I go and read Shankaracharya's Charidabhasya in order to refute? You know, some persons, but, you know, our acharyas have already done that, so you can just study the writings of our acharyas. And like what Prabhupada did, he never went and studied those technical, although he had, you know, chemistry background. He could have. He didn't. But he, as he said, he defeated all of them without having read one of those books. And what basis did he do so? It's just the spiritual strength. That is deep conviction. But when we understand fundamental, deeply understand, so the best is to go deeply in our own tradition, and if we truly and deeply understand our own tradition, then without, you could ask them, what do they say about this? That's what Prabhupada did. What do they say about that? And then probe it deep enough so you can understand the fundamental underpinnings of out of place, and go from there without having to wade through all the literature. If one is going to do that, as some persons were directly instructed by Prabhupada to do that, then one needs to be very strongly sanitized or inoculated, because it's really atheistic laden stuff, and it may not be so obvious. It may be, you know, the intelligence may become enamored. Oh, this is very profound, very deep. If we're not really deeply rooted and fixed in Siddhanta, just word juggling can look like, you know, a magician. How would that go? You can throw so many balls up in the air at once. Really talented stuff. So we have a tendency in academia to be charmed and awed by displays of word juggling without any substance behind it. If we're rooted in substance, then you can see exactly what's going on. Deception. And innocent people are being misled. And that, you know. But it's easy to be charmed Never. The deep-rooted in either case, if you go there or don't go there, one needs to become deeply rooted in our own tradition. And largely, like, you know, the average student is not like, you know, the accomplished scientist. They're just dabblers. The accomplished scientist has a deep egoistic mission. And the dabblers are just, they're just following, you know, the ways of academia. So in that case, you can just ask them what the main idea is. Or what some of the details of that main idea is. Without having to think about it then. It's a service that devotees render. I've seen over a period of time that different people come with their what about this, what about that, what about this, because if the devotee doesn't have to go there and need this and need that, okay, you know, that can be done. On occasion, it seems appropriate. But the devotee is a place where someone can go with speculative information presented before the devotee, and the devotee, you can look at the fundamentals that are out of place, address where's the holes in the bucket, and then look at the Vedic model. Talking about which?
Surrender.
What?
Surrendering to Krishna.
Oh, surrendering to Krishna. Okay. You just surrender to Krishna and Krishna takes care of everything?
I don't know. When you surrender, how do you surrender?
There's six symptoms of surrender found in Padma Purana. They're described in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Surrender doesn't mean like it's something that I just feel, okay, now I'm surrendered, now Krishna's going to take care of everything. There are things that I need to do, and that's the manifestation of my surrender to Krishna. Things that are favorable for devotional service, I accept them. That's a symptom of surrender. Things that are unfavorable, I do without them. It's a symptom of surrender. I'm still doing things. I'm not just waiting for Krishna to take care of me. I'm practically acting in the world in the mood of surrender to Krishna. Selecting. These are things that are favorable for bhakti. I take them. I act upon them. I invest energy in them as an expression of my surrender to Krishna. And the do's and the don'ts, then maintenance. Surrender is to understand Krishna is my maintainer. It doesn't mean I'll just sit at home and Krishna is going to maintain me. But I understand, it's not my effort. Some people make a lot of effort and they hardly have anything. Some persons make very little effort and they have so much. Who's the maintainer? My effort? Or Krishna? So, I do my prescribed duties diligently because it's for Krishna. And I understand He's the one that's maintaining me. He's the one that's protecting me. Humility before Krishna is an expression of surrender to Krishna. Not passive. Humility isn't just a passive thing. It's a quality, an active, dynamic quality. Humility. The absence of humility is, hey, I'm this sincere devotee. And Krishna, can you please hurry up and deliver the what I want? Because I'm the sincere devotee. Well, that's not an expression of humility, it's surrender. And dedication of body, mind, and words entirely to the service of the Lord is an expression of surrender. So there are the six limbs of surrender. And in all of that, yes, the understanding is Krishna is taking care of me. One of the ways he's taking care of me is by giving me the right indications how to lead my life. And my surrender is exhibited by I do it. Because I know it's from Krishna and it's his well-wishing upon me. That's surrender. What's the question? You're not understanding which?
Looks like these qualities are...
I got it. So what's the question? What's the punchline?
But I am also evaluating, taking it separately. So, I'm not able to understand, evaluating separately is making... when I see, for example, say one quality and I see how I was doing with respect to that quality, how I have been cultivating.
That's nice.
Evaluating separately is okay.
Your question is evaluating separately okay?
Yeah.
Qualities?
Yeah.
Although they're related, they're separate. I'm not sure what you're struggling with here. You want to know, is it okay? It's okay. It's not that... So, the two scriptural references that may help, I'm not sure exactly what you're asking. One scriptural reference is there are 26 qualities of the devotee. One of them is principal, the other 25 are marginal, or tatastha lakshana, and svarup lakshana. The one that's svarup lakshana is Krishna eka sharana, surrender to Krishna, like the previous question. Following behind that one, the others come. And now, when you look at the others, is it okay to look at the others? Sure. In relate, but they're not going to manifest without Krishna Ekasharana. And part of Krishna Ekasharana, a subset of that is, I want to come before Krishna decorated with such qualities for his pleasure. Not for another reason. Not that, so that my peers can look at me and go, wow, she has this quality. She has this ornament. Wow. She has that decoration. Oh, I want that one too. So it's not a way of competition and envy. It's a way of pleasing Krishna. It's a subset of that one. Another scriptural reference is in the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, verses 8 through 12. There's items of knowledge, jnanam, and then there's this hierarchy. Out of all of those items of knowledge, one of them is most important. Mayi chanam yogena bhaktir avyabhicharini, which is the long way of saying Krishna eka sharanam. Unmixed devotion to Krishna. Where do you get an unmixed devotion to Krishna? And then the other, looking at first paragraph of the purport, you'll find acharya upasana. And then you put those two together and you get all the other ones. All the other characteristics of knowledge. They're qualities. Look at the list. Qualities. Then he goes down the list. And the first two on the list, just, you know, as far as, you know, text eight, amanitvam, vidvam, vidvam, humility and pridelessness. This is very much connected to surrender to Krishna, humility and pridelessness. So, okay, how do I get, I gotta work on humility. For what, so that I can be more in equipped or in tune with avyavichari bhakti. But, you know, I'm struggling with this, so I need the mercy of my spiritual master. It all fits together. It's not wrong to look at each of those qualities, but they're following behind the lead item. Visually, think of a needle, and there's the point of the needle, then there's the shaft of the needle, and there's the head of the needle that's pulling the thread. So the point of the needle goes in first. The shaft follows the point. And the thread pulls everything else along. The eye of the needle. Jumping around like a jumping bean going nowhere.
I don't have any of those.
Don't have any?
Any of those. Like, what do I want to do? Something else. That was the reason why I was when you clarified that the approach is okay.
The approach is okay provided that, and I'll say it again, the first item is in place. That first item energizes your effort. It empowers your effort. And however long it takes, that's okay. You just stay with it. But make sure you got one more time. Make sure you got the item number one in priority position. Then it flows. But if you don't have that in place, it's this material paradigm that says, okay, I'm going to work on this over here. No, I'm going to work on that over there. I'm going to work on that over there. You know, very quickly you lose sight of what the purpose is. And then you're the jumping game. So stay with stay focused. All these other things are just to enhance that. Most of the time you're what?
I'm confused.
You're confused? Most of the time? Really?
I cannot discern whether I did purchase service in a proper service attitude or not. My question is how can you discern that?
Well, these kinds of questions, a very realistic, honest answer is just assume that there's a mix. That's a fair assumption. There's some service attitude and there's some other kind of stuff going on. But we're not fully purified yet. So, now what to do? Next step. Let me, rather than focus on eliminating the negative, let me focus on the positive. Let me focus on what real, sincere, and humble service is. As I do that, the third thing happens, where the distractedness becomes more clear. The selfishness and egoism and, you know, all that yucky stuff. Envy, pride, lust, greed, anger. It all becomes more clear where that's coming from. And then, now we'll go to the jumping bean program. Don't just go right away to that negative thing and lose track of what you're trying to accomplish. Because then you just control loop and you're right back where you started. Like Shukadeva Goswami, stay focused. Every verse. He's focused. Stay focused. What's going on here? What's the purpose? The purpose is to please Krishna. To serve Krishna. In a mood of service. Humble mood of service. That's the purpose. That's the focus. And so something over there is distracting. While you're attending to that something over there, stay focused. That's what you're growing. Nurturing. That. On the strength of Vajana Kriya, Anartha Nivritti will follow. There's the point of the pin, and then there's the shaft of the pin. Follow the point of the pin. Stay focused. Not about you, it's about Krishna. Not about you conquering material energy, it's about Krishna. You're not the material energy conqueror. That's Krishna. He's a servant. So stay. That's there. Otherwise you wouldn't be in Krishna consciousness. So that is mixed. So stay with the Vajra Kriya nicely performed. Then these other, contaminations, distractions, impurities, they'll show themselves. And from that strength you address those things, but don't lose track of the purpose while you're doing the attending to part. And even before, during, and after, your focus stays. And then, you know, as Priya was saying, then there's some other something else shows up. So you attend to that other something else. But you're not losing track of the focus. Good luck. You said it's a two-part question. Does that take care of it?
The second part is when, like in all of our services, we are meant to serve spiritual master and Krishna. But while I'm performing my role as a wife or a friend or you know whatever, then like that service also goes to the person.
But where is it? What's at the center? It's not you don't have relationships, but make Krishna at the center. So it's the medium is service to Krishna. Medium is devotional service. So now it may be directed to my husband, may be directed to my friend, it may be directed to the people of the program, may be directed to the when I go shopping and it's the shop owner. But what's at the center? Serving Krishna. This is fun. There's so many varieties of service to Krishna. I don't get lost. It's not like it may go to that person. That's okay. Krishna's at the center. Think outside of your own autobiography. Think of a pure devotee. Think of Prabhupada, who met so many people that he sacrificed his life for people he never even met before. What was he doing? He was giving them Krishna. So many religions. So, there's the model. So, our lives are, lifelike compared to it. It's significant. But the principle is the same. Krishna is the center. Make that center very strong. And then each time you go from Krishna into this relationship, that relationship, it's not depleting the Krishna centeredness. It's amplifying. It's appreciating the unlimited diversity of Krishna. He's the center of everyone's life. Some may know it, some may not know it, but that's Krishna. I marvel again and again at the diversity of devotees in the movement. Such culture, language, personality, modes of nature, background, such diverse. And you know, the slice of all of that you're dealing with is make Krishna the center. You have, as you put it, roles to play in service to Krishna. There are different varieties of service to Krishna. And that's the real enjoyment. It's not like, well, I like my role as such and such, but I don't know if I like the other one. Some of the other ones. As much. It's service to Krishna, that's the... If that liking is there, then you can take any role. Okay? Last question.
Guru Maharaj, you mentioned that Vedic knowledge is inaccessible to mundane scholars. My understanding, our movement is different from other more conservative Vedic traditions, and that we go out and try to speak in the language of scholars and actually open the doors to deep knowledge, which in my understanding other bona fide sampradayas don't allow so much.
Not that they don't allow so much, they don't do it. The acharyas of the current day acharyas and head priests of the Sri Sampradaya particularly are so appreciative of what Ramanujacharya did. We're not doing, you're doing. They explicitly say it. Ramanujacharya was a converter of people in deity worship and philosophy and ways of life and qualities. He reached out to all kinds of people. If they don't do it, doesn't mean it's not part of their tradition. They're just not doing it.
Maharaj, in my own case, like I was just trying to, how to strike that balance, like should I just focus on principles rather than giving details to anyone and everyone, and then they come to a particular level?
Personalized, you can't make a blanket rule.
Based on the nature of the
individual. Yeah, the nature of the individual. At the part of it all is compassion, and according to our purity, then Krishna will inspire. See how Prabhupada dealt with people that came to him, and there was no formula. Very spontaneous. Or let's say at least very diversified. It wasn't just, Prabhupada's in a certain mood today. It was very much tuned into the circumstance and inspired by Krishna to address the circumstance. It helps to have a degree of flexibility, and then in situation specific, one can go this direction or that direction. Much to the
Yes, thank you very much for these wonderful glasses. Feeling very grateful. Understanding the submission of Shukadeva Goswami and how we can apply it now and next.
It's an eye opener. It's a heart opener. It seems like there's somebody over there that is actually very appropriate for ourselves.
One person,